ever noticed that mental health screws with our lives in many different ways. It impacts our lives every single day. We meditate and we exercise, we download all the apps, we bitch and we moan, and then cover up all the cracks. It's a part of our lives that we don't want to talk about. Whether we like it or not, it's with us every single day. Mental Health And, a podcast about how mental health impacts our lives and how our lives impact our mental health. Okay, so I think we are a go. This is episode one of Mental Health And this is the second intro you will hear. I recorded the intro for this episode a while ago and then shit got in the way. And I haven't been able to finish sorting it until now, so I'm doing another intro. Mainly because I've been fiddling trying to sort out the introduction music, which you probably notice is a bit jumpy. I'm using a new tool, if you will, to make jingles and music and stuff, and I haven't quite cracked it, but I just wanted to get something out. I think I'm going to try and change my intro. It'll be the same words but maybe slightly different tune, and I'll start singing at some point in the future, so look out for that. It'll hopefully get better quality, but for now let's just get the content out there and get straight into it. So it's been a whirlwind of a 2024 so far, and I can't even remember what I said last time, but I'm not going to talk much more, and just let's go into the actual intro. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome to episode one of this new sort of podcast format of Mental Health And. For this series, and it four episode series at a time, we'll be talking about mental health and masculinity. So I have two guests already booked and recorded. This is episode one, which is going to be with the leader, CEO, I think is his title, of Beyond Equality, Dan. And yeah, it was recorded a while ago, and it's just taken me this long to find the mental energy to do this. Trying to a constant battle of not trying to do things by perfection, whereas if I don't just do stuff, it'll never happen. So don't worry too much about the quality. I mean, phones are good enough to do it, although I am on my professional microphone doing this now. But I need to just get on with it and do it, fling content at the wall and see what shit sticks. So yeah, here we are, episode one. Four episode journey. I have got other people lined up and just trying to find time to book with them, so I'm very excited to go on this journey. I've got a couple of other ideas for future themes, if you will, for the series, especially with the idea of hopefully doing some with some young people, maybe partnering and linking up with youth services that I know from my work in that field. But yeah, happy middle of March, everyone. Well, it's not really the middle, was it? 26th? Yeah, 26th of March, and it's been a bit of a roller coaster run personally. March has been very busy. I've just got back from a weekend away with a bit of a university reunion. Tom, friend from uni, has moved to Australia a while ago and came back. We all proceeded to pile into Cardiff and pile into beer and all other things of that nature. It was a lot of fun, a very good way of emptying my funnel, which my partner said, empty your funnel, as she dropped me off at the train station, which was, I thought, quite a nice way of kind of understanding that sometimes we all need those breaks, right? And just the blowout sometimes. Some people don't, not everyone needs to do that, that's not everyone's cup of tea to do, but yeah, my mental health has been up and down, and it's not been at its best, mainly in the week. I'm doing a classic thing where we struggle in the week and then we get better as the weekend comes. But a couple of weeks ago, I was crying at a train station. I think I did a picture on my Instagram socials about, well, Instagram was one of them, about spiraling, where I kind of, I can tell you this, I kind of walked. So the picture this, so I got up and one thing or another happened, and it kind of thought, oh, I'll just go to, I had this plan for the day. This is often what I do, people. I have a plan for the day, and if I don't start right, that fucks me up. So this particular day, I was going to go to the gym, but I got up late, didn't go to the gym. And I was like, okay, well, we can try and bounce back from that, we can do it. And then, so I kind of figured it out, left the house, and then on the way to the train station, realised I'd forgot my house keys. I was like, fuck me, I hate forgetting things. Idiot. And then booked the train from the wrong train station. Can you believe it? Obviously in a mess. So I managed to book another train, sort of just, you know, spunked money up the wall. I don't really have. And then that particular train that I did book was also 20 minutes late. You know, by this point, it's just one of those things where it's a constant one thing after another. It just kind of pushes you and pushes you and pushes you, and before you know it, you're spiraling, which is what I was doing. I was going into the office, which generally does... I'm in a much better mood around people, weirdly. Just talking to people, that can give me some energy, so I definitely was better towards the end of the day. But it was not a good day. And you know, trains are shit anyway, so train being late wasn't unexpected. That's a fairly regular occurrence. But yeah, but I've definitely been better from that since. It works well, life's well. And I'm finally getting around to doing this. So without further ado, let's move on to the main segment. As is the case, as mentioned at the start of this podcast, for the first series, we're looking at mental health and masculinity. And I guess just for some context, I've fallen into this category or the theme first, if you will. I've been doing some work with an organization called Beyond Equality and another one called Let Me Know, two fantastic small charities currently doing workshops in schools about relationships and sort of looking at toxic masculinity and that sort of thing. It's a big part of my growing up. I grew up in South Wales, as some of you know, and it wasn't easy being a boy who cried a lot. I was very emotional, and it showed my feelings a lot. Even though I did play rugby, I did go for a beer. Often told I was oversensitive, though. Kind of had an element of being told to push those feelings down and man up and grow a pair and all of that stuff. But that's thankfully changing for the better with organisations like Beyond Equality. So Daniel Guinness, the managing director, not CEO, there you go, agreed to catch up with me and chat about his own personal experiences of growing up and why and how they set up Beyond Equality, and looking at how mental health and masculinity is currently linking in today's state of play. So without further ado, here we go. Enjoy. Writing. Hello and welcome to Angry Little Welshman and Friends. I'm joined today by the wonderful Dan Guinness, who is one of the founders and managing director of an amazing organization called Beyond Equality. Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much, Nick. Great to be here.
Glad to have you as well. I've explained what this podcast is about to Dan, but just in case people have forgotten, we kind of talk about mental health, toxicity, men's male toxicity, and men's mental health. This particular set or series of shows is looking specifically at the male kind of environment and sphere of mental health and attitudes towards the world in general, I guess. But we'll get into that in a bit more detail eventually. But Dan, welcome. How are you doing? How is your week going so far?
Yeah, pretty great, honestly. My Tuesday is one of the best days for me because when I'm home, what I do on a Tuesday is head down to a class to start my day. I go to the gym, and I've been doing this. It's kind of like gymnastics for old people, I guess. And so we do things like we've been building up to do handstands and cartwheels and all of that. So it's a great way to start the day. So yeah, you've caught me just after that, and I'm pretty in a pretty good mood and pretty good energy with
Nice.
it. Yeah.
That's interesting. Gymnastics is one of those, there's a lot of core strength and muscles we don't often use as we get older. And
Yeah.
our feet.
And I got to say, like growing up, like I'm a pretty tall, skinny fella. So gymnastics, it was never, no one ever pushed me in that direction. And for good reason, I'm not very good at it. But yeah, it's lovely to be able to just like learn to use your body in a slightly different way. Yeah, it's a privilege to have a couple hours to do that each week.
Yeah, amazing. I can you and what, how far off are you from a handstand?
You know, today I did a full freestanding handstand for about 15 seconds. So
Wow.
yeah,
That's
it's
amazing.
difficult, but I wobble my way to get up.
Good
But
work. I remember when I started doing yoga years ago, and you see some handstands and that sort of stuff is yoga-esque, if you will.
yeah.
And I remember trying to do a handstand thing, and oh, I could do those as a child, easy. And I'm like, oh my God, where's my arm strength and the severe amount of weight that I've now got compared to when I was maybe nine?
Yeah, and 23 kilos.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not easy as an adult. Good work. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad we've caught you on a good day as well. So for those who don't know, let's get to know you a bit better. So me and Dan have worked together. I do some work for Beyond Equality. That's how we've got to know each other. But Dan, if you could introduce yourself a bit, maybe where you're from, your background, and what your kind of personal and professional elements of your life are.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Dan. I'm originally from Australia. And yeah, that's where most of my family still is. And it's where I call home. But like, I think part of my introduction, especially if we're getting into this conversation around mental health, is like I moved around a lot when I was a kid, about the age of 10 or 11. And I think I always kind of struggled to find that space for belonging somewhere. That's been like a big theme if I can really settle in. And you know, like I could see my brother did it very quickly, very easily. Would arrive in a new class and sort of be running around with 10 mates by the end of the day. Whereas I was I guess a bit quieter, or I don't know what. But one of the big themes that came out of that was I saw that in Australia in particular, like quite a few other places, the boys who are good at sport tend to be popular, and I or tended to have people around them. And I thought, hold on a second, that's the route. That's what I can do. Sadly, my sports career was a little bit in my school years defined by my gymnastic skills, like not very good. And you know, despite that, I sort of really loved playing and got involved. But then when I was about 18, 19, I had a huge growth spurt and I suddenly became, you know, very tall guy, about 6 foot 7, and got signed up for a rugby contract. And, you know, I was
Oh,
like, oh my
wow.
goodness, it's all coming together. And it was great for a bit. And then also like a little bit, felt a little bit empty after a while. And then I started getting these injuries. And
As happens in rugby.
yeah. Every week or so. But I got some quite serious injuries, and I ended up having four surgeries on my back, and
Wow.
I had a disc removed, and there's metal plates and screws and, you know, bone grafts and lots of things down there. And in that moment, I all of a sudden like wasn't the sporty guy, wasn't the strong guy, was really dependent upon other people. You know, I had for a while I had to have people like help me get in and out of the shower, right? So it was pretty tough physically, and there was, you know, quite a bit of pain and things. But what shocked me at that moment was just how much I depended upon that identity and that understanding of myself as a sports guy and the strong guy. And I can remember breaking down and crying one night and just feeling like, why is anyone actually going to be my mate? You know, like, why do people want to have me around if I'm this person, which is I knew was stupid. I knew I liked plenty of people, you know, for all sorts of different reasons, right? But I think I just had this own self-image of myself and understanding of why people liked me that was very narrow. And I, you know, it was a tough moment, But I think looking back on it now, like such an incredibly important and transformative moment, as like since then, since that point, I've learned to find joy and meaning and connection and so many other things from doing things that I would have never thought to do in the past, like handstands, but also like dance classes or like cooking or just like connecting with people and having a good yarn. So anyway, I don't know how I did there, but that's sort of my story. And I don't know, Nick,
Yeah, no,
I could ramble on forever, but yeah.
I'm always happy letting people ramble. Dan, thanks for sharing that. It sounds like quite a roller coaster, a bit of a story, as you say. Listeners will know I'm a huge rugby fan, so I could easily go into that conversation with you for a while, but that's not the purpose of this podcast. Do you mind me?
Next series, yeah.
You mentioned, and it's funny you say about sport in Australia. I think Australia is known as the sporty country. It's rugby league, rugby union, Aussie rules, cricket, all kind of big elements of their culture as well, understandably. Your injuries, when did they, what sort of age did you have to stop playing rugby?
I was pretty gradual there, Nick. A bit of a slow learner, to be honest. But I think my professional career ended at 24, 23, something like that, like pretty young. I think I last put on the boots when I was maybe 36 or so. But by that point, I was playing very amateur and actually got a bit of a wonderful time traveling around the world on a bit of a side project, again for another podcast, but spent some time, played for a club in Fiji, in New Zealand,
Oh,
in
nice.
Argentina, in England. So anyway, it's been a wonderful sport for me to meet people and go places
Yeah.
and get a real sense of purpose and everything. I don't want to be ragging on it, I don't, but also some challenging moments.
This sounds, there's that element of, like you say, that you had, you so just to talk about what you shared about having that breakdown, as you called it, and why would people want to hang out with me from this point? Is it, it sounds, because there's that professional element, and then it sounds like you carried on playing, so you obviously still enjoyed the game, but there's that kind of a element of, unless I'm really good at this, is that fair to kind of gauge, I guess? It seems like there's a definite define, like the fact that you carried on playing obviously meant that you still enjoyed the game and got a lot from it, and it wasn't, was it still a big part of your identity at that point, or was it just for fun as well?
Yeah, it's been different things, Like I think there's this joy of moving. Like it's a wonderful team sport, right? And you actually, even at times, like you can be putting your head in places that you don't really want to put it, right? Like you're throwing it in, and there's some big guys running, and they're going to bash into you. But it feels wonderful for doing that for the team, and you're making that contribution and having this sense that you got a line and you're not going to let people through, and there's a sense of satisfaction and enjoyment there. Or running with the ball is great. The 3 times I've done a nice long pass has been fantastic,
Where
but
someone's caught it and it all is all
right,
on, yeah.
and I think I remember scoring a try like when I was about 19. So no, it's a wonderful game, but you're right. Like there is this element there where sometimes I can get caught up in needing that external approval and wanting other people to be like, "Hey, you're really good at this," or "You're good at this," or "Well done," or whatever it is. And nowadays, I play a lot of touch rugby, and I can find I do get caught in that sort of a space as well, in that game, and get really frustrated when, I walk off and I'm like, "Oh, I didn't play very well." And there's some positive stuff there, like holding yourself to the standard and wanting to
Yeah, of
do
course.
an activity and do it well. And then there's a flip side of it when you're like, you're going into that space, you've had a bad day, and you're kind of looking for an ego boost and a something else. And I don't know, it's just something for me to be mindful of,
Yeah.
that relationship with that external validation and needing to prove myself versus everybody else or whatever else. It's, you don't want to slip too far down some of those paths.
No. It's funny. We've obviously not spoken too in depth before about this, but so I played rugby. I injured myself, had to stop playing rugby because I got a metal plate in my skull. Listeners will know this, and now also play touch rugby.
Really?
I play touch rugby at Bure, and I think it's interesting what you're saying. So we play often end up having like under 15s and under 16s join us. They train twice already that day and then come and play touch rugby with 30 to 50-year-olds. And it's funny how I feel similar to what you're saying about I can just enjoy the mess ups, enjoy making mistakes and laugh about it. But it's about 15, even in a touch rugby game, you can see they're still so intense and annoyed if they mess something up, which is something about approval, maybe. So that all kind of happens, and you've shared quite a lot of that story. And then you are now in the where are you living now?
Oh, it's a complicated one, Nick. It's a very complicated one because my work's in the UK almost entirely, a little bit elsewhere in Europe, but mainly in the UK. But the organization isn't based anywhere. Like we've got a lot of people in London, but also a bunch up in, the Northeast, a couple in Scotland, a bunch across in the West, over into Wales. So, but me personally, I'm staying in Amsterdam across in the Netherlands.
Nice.
So my partner's Dutch. And it worked seamlessly during COVID, I would say. Now there's a little seams that are there that you've got to work through and probably find a new balance at some point. But I just say there's a lot of a lot of Eurostar points getting racked up. Yeah, I'm across every couple of weeks.
And so when did yeah, and it's funny because I was about to say, and then of course you moved to the UK, and then it dawned on me as I was asking that question, I don't actually know that you're in the UK, and the way that you're talking suggests that you might not be. But I guess at some point you moved to Europe, let's say, from Australia.
Yeah, I moved to the UK. Well, no, I first went to Italy for a rugby contract, and then anyway, finished up, and then came to England, and I was at uni. I came to go back into uni,
Nice.
and that was in 08. And I've been living and or working in the UK since then. So, 15 years now. Kind of on and off, back and forth, in and out. Which has been it's been great. I mean, it has. It's been really great. It's one of those things where, like, if you're, it's not for everyone, but I think if you are fortunate enough to have the chance to live in a different place, even though, like, let's be frank, like Australia and England are not like completely
No,
opposites.
they're not.
Geographically, maybe, but there's a lot of other similarities there. But having that chance to be over in a different place, it also teaches you a lot about where you come from and just the contrast that you see with some of the subtle stuff about how people organize their lives or whatever else can make you reflect on, like what's important to you rather than just take it all for granted.
And so with that in mind, I guess, so you obviously you went Kim to the UK, did the university. What where how did you get from there to setting up this organization? I guess
Yeah, so it
next
was
week.
really a little bit that moment of like that cultural clash, I think, that precipitated this for me. I mean, stories can be complicated and they come in different angles and different routes, right? But I think one of the big things I noticed when I came across, I came to Oxford, and it's probably like a core part of this story. And because it is a place, it does have people from all over the world, right? Especially when you get to the graduate school. But at that undergraduate level, there's quite a lot of people who went to quite elite schools in the UK. And I think it was very easy for me to arrive there because I was a tall Australian rugby player and fairly well accepted. They had a couple of jokes that were ready to go, and otherwise they're pretty keen to have a beer and find out more. So that was very easy for me. But I think with that, there were some moments where I was just, I guess, like shocked by the openness and self-evidence and like unashamedness, that's not a word, but you know what I mean,
Yeah, I know what you mean.
around class. I think that was really jarring. Like, we obviously have class in Australia, but it's something that no one would admit to. You know, it's the thing, you like this sort of hidden thing in the background. Whereas it was like almost seemed it sometimes to be justified and celebrated amongst some subgroups, you know, in at Oxford. And I think that I found that really jarring, and then started, you know, questioning where's that culture coming from, because a lot of it was linked into some of the places and groups that I was part of. And anyway, ultimately, fast forward a few years and lots of different stories and lots of moments of being called out myself for my behaviors and other people, kind of got to this point where I realized that there was so many things about being a man in that context that were kind of like, you know, there's a few boxes that were there for you, and you could either become like a drama student, or you could become like, you know, a debater or someone like this, or you could become like a rugby player or a football player. And they all had slightly different identities. But there were boxes that people felt like they had to fit into. And within those boxes, like, people could be super lovely, kind, generous, all these positive words. And yet at other moments, there'd be the behaviors that came up, like, especially say, like, around how people were out in the town or in nightclubs, like how they're treating each other, how they're treating other men, how they're treating the women around them. That sort of stuff at times could be really, really toxic, for
Of
lack of
course.
a better word. And so that for me, that contrast between who these people were, who we were, who I was as an individual, who I wanted to be as an individual, versus how I was sometimes, just felt like it needed a little bit of a bridge to get there. And so I tried to organize like some workshops via initially actually the local rape crisis center, to get them, they were doing some trainings, and get them in to do some trainings on like, what does sexual violence look like? What is this harassment? How does it work in relationships? And anyway, like, the guys, you know, a big group of guys were happy to turn up for that for me and come along, and they did. And they're like, hey, this is super interesting, super important stuff. But the general feedback was, it doesn't really relate to me, like, to them as individuals. And I was like, well, actually kind of it does. Like, it's absolutely exactly about who I am. And I think it's kind of about who we are as a group. So the organization started from that point of just seeing that there was this need and possibility and opportunity, but the sort of things that were there currently weren't really reaching men. And so we've basically tried to set up an organization that exists to get men to actually have thoughtful, reflective, real conversations about themselves and about how they interact with the world around them, about who they want to be, around relationships, around sex, also around mental health, and really just around a lot about that group culture, that team culture, how it works, how it could work. So that's what we've been doing for 10 years, and glad now to be working with people like you in that.
I'm delighted myself as well. I think I was so excited when I f discovered your organization, because I was having a similar moment a few years ago of like, there's not a lot of this stuff. Oh, there's this organization. I'll get in touch. That's a really interesting story, Dan. I think what's evident is, like you say, it's the evolution then from that moment of realization. And I think it's incredibly insightful of yourself to have got, you know, to have come to a point of recognizing your own behaviors. I know I wasn't that insightful at university, and knowing that actually this is, I think, realizing these certain be which behaviors aren't okay, and more that at least we need to talk about them, if nothing else, right? It's you're not we're not there to say what's right or wrong per se, but it's let's talk about why they might be wrong or might be Right. So like you say, fast forward 10 years, and you so if you can elaborate a bit more to the audience, you know, what is the organization doing at the moment? What are services, and what kind of positive work are you doing? It's a chance to promote the work.
Yeah, sign it up, make a big donation, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So we as an organization, most of our projects are either in schools, universities. We've got new projects getting set up in professional and amateur sports, though we've been working in sports since the start, really. And also we do work in corporates and other workplaces. So slightly different things in each of those places, but what's the same across the board is that we're getting a space for a small group of people who already have some connection to each other. We make sure that they're actually feeling like this sense of psychological safety to get beneath the surface. Then we're giving them a variety of exercises which actually give them a chance to explore the sorts of expectations that they have or they feel or that other people around them will feel. And to explore how that leads to the sort of attitudes they have on for themselves and the sorts of behaviors they have towards others or towards themselves. And those conversations then range from like what that pressure is to be a man. I mean, I find it easiest to talk about the schools one in particular, which I know also is where you've worked a bit. And because I think people find it maybe problematically, people find it easier to imagine young people doing this exploration. And I say problematically because I think it's so important for us to do this, like sort of continuously, but definitely if we say move into a new place in our life, like become a father, or you know, we're suddenly into a position of management of a team and we've never done that before. Hey, pretty important moment to take a step back and think about how you're doing things and how that's impacting on people. But anyway, kids at school, you know, we'll start off, and remember, sometimes we get pitched as like the anti-toxic masculinity people or the anti-Andrew Tates, right? So there can be some feeling in the room of like, who are these losers going to be who are walking in here? But we win them over with a couple of smiles and jokes, and actually just by being curious and deeply interested in who they are. And it's like the opposite from the other messages they're getting, which are like, fit into what I think you should be. We're like, hey, I'm really interested in actually the fullness of who you are. And we have activities, you know, silly games sometimes, serious conversations sometimes, but that get them to talk about firstly what that pressure is that they feel that they have to live up to. You know, what is that mask they put on when they're at school or at home or, you know, with their friends, that where they pretend to be somebody else, and like, why is that there? And, you know, what does it hold them back from doing? Then we think about that. Second session is around relationships. So we think about how those own senses of who they are and that pressure they feel to perform something actually impacts on the way they form relationships with other people. So we talk about their friendships and maybe where banter can get into that negative territory and start tearing people down. And we talk about intimate relationships, sexuality, sex, you know, where that pressure to perform and to pretend to be something might mean that you don't share your sexuality with your friends. You try to cut that piece off from you, you know, and if you're bi or gay, you're not exploring that. You don't feel safe to explore that. No matter who you are and what your identity is, what sort of pressure that puts on your relationships. And I know plenty of teenagers, and I don't know in particular, but I do know plenty of teenage boys, plenty of boys in their 20s, plenty of men in their 50s, feel huge expectations that they need to be incredible at sex and know exactly what they're doing and be able to be like this Casanova type of figure from the start, have great chat, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And like, it's not something that just happens like that. And especially if your concern is to try to perform something to the other person, or if your concern is to try to like get to a specific goal of normally penetrative sex, it's not conducive to actually having an honest conversation about what I want, what you want, what your boundaries are. Do you actually want to do this with me? You know, would we be having more fun doing something else? And yeah, so that's a really crucial conversation. And then thirdly, we get into the conversations around more systemic things that are going on in society. So the way those everyday interactions actually build up. And if you look at what's going on, some of those little jokes we might be making here are part of these broader structures that are saying consistently or are putting into legislation sometimes or around the working conditions are saying one group of people is better than another group of people. And so once you get help people understand that, you really help those young people, take charge and realize the power they have to shift some things, at least within their friendship groups. And then from there, who knows? So anyway, that's the sort of stuff we talk about. So mental health and identity right the way through to their role in broader social justice or social structures, community.
Amazing. It's amazing work, Dan, and it's been a privilege to be part of it and continue to be part of it. What if is there one before I said, because I think it's what you've talked about, sex, I think is interesting as well, the expectations on men and sex. And I had anxieties when I was younger about sex, and it's that because of the bravado and everything else that everyone sets up for that, it's so scary to the idea of talking about it. I'm going to do another series at some point on men and sex and kind of explore that, because I think it's a really interesting topic. Like you say, what is sex generally? Those young people, penetration, that's it. That's it. There's lots of other things that people can do to enjoy themselves. We'll kind of wrap this element up and kind of come moving towards, we're running out of time slowly. And
I told you I ramble.
so no, it's
I
been
warned
great.
you.
It's been great. I've not had to think too hard. And so what, is there a key message at the moment or something that you think young men need to hear presently? I'm putting you on the spot a bit here. So a key message or a profound kind of thing to be aware of, or I don't know, that you think could be useful for young men, young boys to hear these in this current timeline. I watch too many Marvel films in this in the current day. What do you think is something that young men could hear that would help them?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I feel kind of the core of it is going to be something around like, you're enough, like, you're enough. There is people who are going to like really value you. There's places, many places in this world where you can find that belonging. You're enough. You don't need to be somebody else. And it's, I mean, I'd say with that, like, that doesn't ignore that there's going to be some shitty times and some, you'll probably come across some crappy people who, try to force you to be
Don't
something
think
else.
you're enough. Yeah.
Yeah, you are, even in those moments, you're enough.
Nice. It's funny you say that. We in another project I work on in Europe, we did a piece of work with 200 young people and asked them what are the biggest things that impact their mental health. Relationships were top, unsurprisingly. And then like there was a blend of other things in the top in the bottom in the other two, three slots below it. And expectations was one of them. They didn't say expectations of what, but just expectations generally, which I think is interesting, as you say. And I imagine they're different for different people, but you know what the expectations that of young men and men in general are part of the problem to a degree. You know, sometimes like you say, setting those these are what you need to be as opposed to you can just be you. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you, Dan. So just before we finish, we're going to move on to some kind of questions about we've talked about anger, and I guess well, we haven't talked about anger. The podcast talks about trying to change to negative energy into kind of positive action. And those definitions are very loose. Because what you, this sounds this is a great example of you recognize that there were some issues, so, dare I say it, problems in how men are perceived, how men perceive other things and then their roles in life. And you've made quite a big positive action by deciding to set up an organization, which I know is no easy feat. But on a much sillier and lower note, what is it in life that would you what is it? Is there anything in life that gets you angry the most personally? Is something
I'm
small?
sorry, Nick. You said we can pause, right?
Yeah, of course we can.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll jump. Sorry.
So thanks for that words of wisdom there, Dan. And I think it's a really nice inspirational message that you've kind of ended that kind of conversation on. So just before we wrap up, we like to kind of go back to the personal, I guess, just the usually nice anecdotal bit of humor maybe. And a question I like to ask my guests are, what's one of your in relation to anger, because I think we mature, right, on how we manage negative energy, let's call it like anger, fear, disappointment. What would you say, and this can be either something serious if you want to go down that route, or it can be something trivial and silly. Most of mine are trivial. What's your earliest, most recent, what's your earliest, sorry, memory of being angry? And what was it? Why were you angry?
Yeah, no, I can remember one for sure where I had a friend staying with us on a family holiday, and went away, and my brother and this friend were playing a game, and I think like they just worked out how they could just like annoy me and beat me at it. Like we're out, I can't even remember what it was, but some sort of like silly outdoor, like throwing a something at a tree type of game, and they could kind of like work it, and they were just like beating me every time, and I got so angry. And I can remember it's one of these it's at my grandma's house and with a wood fire, so you have like logs, you know, that have been sawn, and you know, we have to split them. And I remember running around as a 13-year-old with this huge thing that was too heavy for me to carry because I just like wanted to throw it at them. And so yeah, fortunately I wasn't as strong as Donkey Kong, so I couldn't do that. And but yeah, I could not control it, you know. It was like just completely, it was gone, and I just had to like lash out at anything, and well, at them. I had to lash out at them.
And it's interesting, isn't it? And as you know from the workshops you spoke of, it's kind of there when it comes to men, and when we do it with guests of all genders, but I think there's an element of that people like that's an expectation almost, that that's an okay reaction. That's the pick up something and throw something or
Yeah, we've got so many like discussions around men and anger, and I think like it is something you want to be learning to process. And I know next week we're hosting this event, and one of the groups coming along is this group out of Aotearoa, New Zealand, and yeah, and they do a lot of work on getting men who have experienced trauma, who are like in the toughest positions in society, to process that trauma and to heal, and from there to be able to like actually process and like deal with their anger in different ways, as a way of like preventing family violence, the way of like stopping people like ending up back in prison and various things. So really powerful work, but you know, it's like getting those tools for men to process anger is crucial, and like often anger is the only emotion that men are allowed to express. So everything gets channeled towards that rage and that yelling. And then on the flip side, I know that personally, I've kind of I got to a point where I'd branded anger as always bad, you know, and
Well,
as bad
exactly,
and
yeah, and that's what
wrong.
this—that's what I'm trying to change. Yeah, it's an interesting. Sorry, carry on.
And I know a lot of the work, like did some work in my relationship, and a lot of that actually was being like, you know, sometimes what I feel towards my partner is anger, you know, because she's done something that's pissed me off. Whether or not that's my issues or her issues, I don't
Well,
know what it
exactly.
is, but something's happened and it's pissed me off. And it's not necessarily a very positive thing to just swallow that down and pretend it doesn't exist. And actually ends up with me being moody and avoidant and all these other things, which is still me feeling that anger and just me not processing it. And it ends up, you know, in this new negative behavior that kind of like ruins my day, ruins her day, as opposed to being like, hey, I'm actually feeling a little bit angry about this. This is what I think happened. Yeah, it's getting these emotions up inside me, and what I realize is that I need something that wasn't there. Like I needed some communication, or could you have just asked me, you know, or whatever it was. And then be like, hey, next time, can we like solve this in a different way? Yeah.
Beautiful, beautifully
So,
said.
yeah.
If only, what was it? How old are you? 13, were you saying earlier, with your brother and a friend were Making
Yeah,
you do
right. I don't know if they would have listened to me.
No,
Anyway, that's
come
all
on. Can we sit down for a minute? I need to tell you
right.
that I'm feeling angry. Brilliant. Dan, thanks for sharing that. And it's a really nice voice clip, possibly, for some of the what I yeah I've had histories of anger issues, let's call it. But I think there's something about, the negative emotions get a bad rep. And I think as when I was growing up, it was you're told to, and there's that whole keep calm and carry on slogan that has seemed to be everywhere in the UK, which I hate because it's that idea of just, to me, it says ignore your emotions and just crack on. Yeah, which is not possible. And it just boils and boils until it comes up into a big explosion. Brilliant. We're going to wrap it up there, Dan. Thank you so much for your honesty and your time today from Amsterdam. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk. Listeners will know that I normally ask the guests to give us a song to play out on. And I can delete this bit, Dan, if you wish. But
You're
Dan
right.
has asked
You're
that
right.
I pick something for him, and I'm yet to do that at the point of recording. So whatever the song is, I'll let you know, Dan. I'll
I won't
basically.
even know. I'm gonna get stitched up with something I completely hate it
He
now.
reached
That's
for the
good.
stars by S Club 7, which isn't the worst song.
Love it. That's a lovely, lovely
It's
tune. No, I don't
inspiration.
know, but I'm sure it's great.
But either way, so yeah, listen, this is what this is playing in the background now, listeners. But anyway, Dan, thank you so much again. We'll maybe have you back on in the future, but I hope you've enjoyed your time. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish?
No, just a huge thank you. And yeah, I think this conversation that you're having with the podcast is also something we can have within our own like families or communities or with our mates or whatever else. Because yeah, it's gonna help us actually be more happy with ourselves and the world around us, but also be more tolerable to be around from other
Yeah,
people. So
absolutely.
yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Dan. I wish you all the best. Take care, everyone. Huge thank you there to Dan Guinness for joining me earlier this year. Going out on Street Dogs is Stand for Something or Die for Nothing. Very important work he's doing, standing up for something that he believes in. Join me in the next podcast where I'm speaking to a very different conversation around masculinity and mental health on episode 2 of Mental Health. And see you there.